Hi, this is Ruth McCauley returning with news from the Decatur area for Thursday, August 4th. We will begin with some of the funeral notices that appear in the Decatur Herald and Review. Linda L. Breedlove, 76, of Lovington, passed away at 11:20 p.m. August 1st at Decatur Memorial Hospital. A funeral service will be held at 11 a.m. Saturday, August 6th, at McMullen Young Funeral Home in Lovington. Visitation will be held from 9:30 a.m. to 11 a.m. Saturday at the funeral home. Burial will be in Arcola Cemetery, Arcola. Memorial contributions in Linda's name may be made to the Lovington Ambulance Service, Kaskaskia Valley Animal Hospital, or to an organization of the donor's choice. Howard H. Herb Bricker Sr., 77, of Findlay, passed away on Wednesday, August 3rd at Shelby Memorial Hospital, surrounded by his loved ones. Per Herb's wishes, cremation rites will be accorded and there will be no services. Juanita Grace Wilson, 83, of Lovington, passed away at 7:20 a.m. on Monday, August 1st, at St. Anthony's Memorial Hospital in Effingham. A funeral service will be held at 3 p.m. Friday, that's tomorrow, August 5th, at McMullen Young Funeral Home in Lovington. Visitation will be held an hour prior to that service at the funeral home. Burial will be in Keller Cemetery in Lovington. Memorial donations may be made in Juanita's name to the Humane Society of Decatur and Macon County or to an organization of the donor's choice. Thomas J. Madell, 78, died on March 21st in New Orleans, Louisiana. He was born in Missouri and raised in Illinois. A celebration of Tom's life will be held Saturday, August 6th at 10 a.m. at Holy Family Church, 2400 South Franklin Street in Decatur. In lieu of flowers, donations may be made to Catholic charities. Sandra Sandy Kuntz, 62, of Pena, died on Tuesday, August 2nd. A memorial service will be held at 11 a.m. Monday at the McCracken Dean Funeral Home in Pena, with visitation 1 hour before that service. Burial will take place at Mound Cemetery in Pena. Memorial donations in Sandy's name may be made to the ASPCA.org, which is the American Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals. Marilyn June Birdwell, 74, of Mount Zion, passed away on Sunday, July 31st at her home, surrounded by her family. The family has chosen a private graveside service to be held at a later date, but memorial donations in Marilyn June's name may be directed to the Decatur-Macon County Humane Society. Clara Louise Clark, 92, of Clovis, New Mexico, passed away at 8:17 a.m. on August 1st at Beehive Homes in Clovis, New Mexico. Clara was a longtime resident of Decatur, Illinois, prior to moving to Portales, New Mexico in October of 2011. I see no indication of when services are scheduled, but It appears that the Muffley Funeral Home in Clovis, New Mexico, will be in charge of the arrangements. There is a note there will be a private family service at a later date, and that burial will be at a later date in Macon County Memorial Park in Harristown, Illinois, where Louise will be interred with her husband, Ralph. we have two funerals that are pending arrangements. Linda Sue Grabowski, 63, of West Lafayette, Indiana, formerly a Forsyth, died on Wednesday, August 3rd. Dawson and Wyckoff Funeral Home in Mount Zion is in charge of those arrangements. And Elaine Mashburn of Moroa, who died on Tuesday, August 2nd. The Calvert Funeral Home in Moroa is in charge of those arrangements. We turn now to the opinion page of the Decatur Herald and Review and start with the editorial, our views. Some good changes, some not so good. There are times when the status quo is best, and other times when change is the best way to move forward. The state's community cares program is one of those instances. Illinois should not move forward with an eligibility and program change that would determine how the state's seniors are provided in-home help from the Department on Aging. Governor Bruce Rauner's administration favors hiring outside agencies rather than individual workers to help provide those services, such as bathing and laundry, that help keep seniors stay at home rather than moving to a nursing home or assisted living facility. Rauner once supported but has changed his mind about adjusting eligibility standards that some groups said eventually could cut services to thousands of seniors. Proposed changes to the program, the administration says, would save about $200 million from a $1 billion program. That sounds great on paper, but likely would cause more problems than solutions, including the possibility of waiting lists for people who need help or more people going to nursing homes. As earlier reported by the Associated Press, most home and community-based programs are based on personal care services that can cost far less than nursing home care. The Springfield State Journal Register, in reporting a veto by Rauner last week, said the governor said the proposal would mean, quote, a person could qualify for both institutional care and home-based services, end quote. Rauner looks at the state's expenses and programs like the businessman he is. In many areas, that's a good thing. He can look objectively at a budget and propose changes more common among publicly held businesses where stockholders hold leadership accountable. But such changes don't always work in instances where the frail or disenfranchised are those served. In this case, the current service model may be expensive, but it's the best way and the fairest way to serve the state's elderly population. Change, however, is the right move for the state's marijuana laws regarding small personal use amounts of the drug. A bill signed by Rauner last week would make possession of those amounts into a civil penalty rather than a criminal penalty for offenses against the state law. The decision does not affect any local laws governed by city ordinance. Making a criminal penalty for personal use amounts is akin to making a mountain out of a molehill. The Illinois court and prison systems have more serious crimes and criminals to deal with. Clearing the docket and prisons of low-level drug offenses and offenders will provide the time needed to prosecute those who truly deserve it and also save much-needed money. We also have a letter to the editor representing the People's Voice. This one signed by Orville Dash of Moroa. I am writing to inform the voters of the Moroa Forsyth School District about the process that the board used to get rid of Superintendent Mike Williams, effective June 2017. First, there was an election in 2015 to fill four empty seats on the board. They ran on the promise of transparency and fairness. I supported them, but did not understand that they also had an agenda to end Williams' employment, Three of the four have joined with an incumbent and a member since appointed to fill a vacancy. This group of five is headed by James Keith, then Lindsay Wise, Christy Harjung, Rhonda Braden, and John Snyder. This board was seated in May 2015 and then held an annual evaluation of Williams in December 2015. They then reviewed the performance for 4 months, and Williams was told his contract would not be extended past June 2017. Under that duress, Williams submitted his resignation. Williams has served us for 4 years as principal and 10 years as superintendent, and during that time was found to be satisfactory and had his contract extended by several school boards. Now, this group claims all before must have been mistaken. There has never been a vote taken by the board on this issue. Williams was promised a hearing, but none has been granted. Williams has said he wishes to stay and will withdraw his resignation. The board's actions are in violation of the Illinois School Code. Oh, there's an interesting issue going there that I was unaware of. That was a letter to the editor signed by Orville Dash of Maroa. I'm turning back now to the front page of the Decatur Herald and Review and picking up what is the above-the-fold lead article. This written by Allison Petty, an H&R staff writer. 80th Annual Lantern Parade Stirs Up Memories and Fun. Barbara Smith can't remember the park where she used to supervise children as a park leader in the early 1970s, but she remembers all the fun she had, leading kids in different sports, teaching them crafts and boondoggle, and constantly saving wire hangers for the big end-of-the-summer event. I would not let my family throw those out, said Smith, 64. That's what you have to make a lantern. Smith drove roughly 6 hours from her home in Lake Winnebago, Missouri, to attend the 80th Annual Lantern Parade in Fairview Park on Wednesday. The district invited back all former park leaders for a reunion as part of the event, where they also got a chance to eat stew like they used to make for the children back in the good old days. All of the former park leaders were given new yellow hats, the traditional headwear for the job. But Brenda Clark came prepared. She wore her faded yellow hat from 50 years ago. During her time in the job, she made homemade ice cream in Galloway Park, built a float that looked like a helicopter, and held countless tetherball tournaments. It was just a great experience, said Clark, 69, and I still see the kids as adults, and we know each other after we talk a while. Eventually, we remember each other. Clark and Mike Reitzel, 66, realized after talking for a bit that they'd worked in the same park 1 year. He has fond memories of playing sports with the kids, teaching them to play chess and checkers, and just generally answering their questions about different topics. They just wanted the attention and somebody to talk to, he said. Today's park leaders spend just an hour in each park rather than the whole day. Still, they feed the kids a free lunch, lead activities, and still manage to form connections. Four parks still have park leaders present in the evening to lead activities. I think our job is important to the community as a whole, said Kylie Hale, 23. She teaches third grade in the Decatur School District and likes the opportunity to get to know the kids during the summer. Hale grew up in Decatur and has her own childhood memories of playing kickball in Kiwanis Park under the supervision of park leaders. Among the roughly 40 kids who regularly visited Johns Hill Park were Ajaya Brooks, 8, and Isiana Brooks, 5. Both girls were enjoying the lantern parade activities and said they'd had a good summer in the parks. Brittany Hood, 22, worked as a park leader in the evenings at Mueller Park. She said it's an awesome feeling when the kids are excited to greet their park leaders each day. All kids from 5 to 18 and even older, they're all very cool. Never had a problem, she said. They just love to come and play basketball. Alvin Jackson, 54, has worked as a park leader on and off for over the last 30 years. He said he's seen dramatic changes in the programs since the 1980s, when he traveled through the parks teaching breakdancing and forming a team of the best dancers. The park leaders as a whole were usually in college then, and they spent more time in the parks, so there were more opportunities to mentor. We used to be able to really bond and connect with the community when we had that kind of time, Jackson said. We were really able to be like a fixture in the community. The kids would be consistent because they knew we were going to be there. It was clear that Jackson still makes an impression on the children in parks he visits. As he spoke to a reporter, several kids walked up to say hi with obvious admiration in their expressions. Besides the park leader reunion, Wednesday's lantern parade was full of activities. The Amazing Dudley and Greater Decatur Youth Band performed, followed by an energetic demonstration from alumni of the Heart High Jumpers, a local jump roping group in the late 1980s and 90s. After that, the kids rotated between different activity stations, led mostly by park district employees. There was soccer, lacrosse, jump rope, an obstacle course, and a particularly heart-pumping station directed by DMH CrossFit Enhance. DJ Theus, 8, said all the stations were fun, but CrossFit was the best. He has been to the Lantern Parade before and was eagerly anticipating the closing of the evening when the kids walk around the park with lanterns they made. He made his by himself, and it had a red candle inside. I had fun this summer, he said. We turn now to the money section of the Decatur Herald and Review and go to a government and politics article. This an AP Wire story out of Springfield, Illinois. State suspends no overtime policy for home care workers. Illinois Governor Bruce Rauner's administration Wednesday suspended its no overtime policy for workers caring for disabled residents in their homes just hours before the workers' union planned to file a lawsuit challenging the plan's legality. Secretary of Human Resources James Dimas said the agency would seek permission to bar overtime hours through an administrative rule with the consent of the Illinois legislature. Human Services prohibited overtime earlier this year after the federal government decided home care workers deserve time and a half pay for work over 40 hours a week. Dimas said the policy, not fully enforced until May, has saved $5 million and provides a break for some caregivers who routinely worked double-digit hours. Previously, we had people working 17 or 20 hours in a day, Dimas said. I don't think people are very fresh and responsive if they put in that kind of schedule. A Kane County judge approved a restraining order on the policy last month, and Dimas said he put enforcement on hold because the workers' union, SCIU Healthcare Illinois, aimed to expand the ban statewide through a lawsuit it was prepared to file Wednesday. SCIU argues that forcing severely disabled residents to choose backups for their caregivers is disruptive, and that there are too few people willing to do the sometimes distasteful work for $13 an hour. An SCIU statement said Wednesday's decision, quote, is an acknowledgement that the Rauner administration violated the law, end quote. The union claims the policy breaks federal law and court orders meant to keep disabled people out of institutional care. Preferred home care costs about $15,000 a year, compared with the $52,000 cost of a nursing home. The union has said the policy has been applied inconsistently, and it threatened to make victims of conscientious caregivers because violating the overtime rule three times could lead to dismissal. A proposed administrative rule, which must be approved by a bicameral, bipartisan legislative panel, will be similar to the policy as it's been practiced, Stimmis said. It could take several months for a decision on the rule, and DHS will not enforce the no overtime plan during that time. I'm turning now to the life section of the Decatur Herald and Review. And looking at some of the things that are going to be happening in the area for the upcoming weekend. Our first is discussion about, or an article about, the celebration coming up in Decatur. This is written, an article written by Danette Beckett, who's an H&R staff writer. The classic rock band 38 Special has kept their longevity as a touring band for over 30 years. Part of what keeps the crowds coming back is the attention they give to each show. "We're neighborhood guys," said 38 Special frontman Don Barnes. "It's a celebration we have every night. The people feed off of that." The band will be one of the highlights during the Decatur celebration at 9:15 p.m. Saturday, August 6th, on the main stage. Although the band has been touring for years, they describe each show like a football game. "The beginning is just as important as the end. We don't slack up, we stack up," Barnes said. "An hour and 40 minutes later, we are exhausted." 38 Special has a long list of music familiar with various ages, which have earned the band gold and platinum awards. Songs such as "Hold On Loosely," "Caught Up in You," and "If I'd Been the One" are often heard on classic rock stations. The band found its popularity in the 1980s, but have rarely stopped touring since then. They began playing together in the Navy town of Jacksonville, Florida, along with other southern rock bands of the mid-70s, southern rock bands of the mid-70s. 38 Special played in many of the same venues as the Allman Brothers, Molly Hatchet, and Lynyrd Skynyrd. "We learned all the cover songs," Barnes said, "but you have to find your own fortitude." Advice was given to 38 Special from Lynyrd Skynyrd's lead vocalist, Ronnie Van Zant. He said, "Don't try to be a clone of everyone else," Barnes said. Van Zant's brother, Donnie Van Zant, is a founding member of 38 Special. Donnie hasn't toured with the band since 2012, and due to health problems. Although they are described as a southern rock band, 38 Special found a larger audience with a rock and pop sound. "We didn't sing about whiskey or gators," Barnes said. "The Beatles were our influences." According to the band, the shows still have an explosive presentation. Even if many band members are in their 60s, Barnes knows they have to keep the crowd's attention and impress them. "We still have a good time and bring that energy," he said. This is where they feel most at home, listening to the crowd sing along. "Some of the songs had a life of their own," Barnes said. "We make sure everybody hears their favorite song." Our next article was also written by Danette Beckett, this also out of Decatur. "Real Life Madman Exhibits Paintings." Artist Bert Hodinott, it's H-O-D-D-I-N-O-T-T. I've never encountered that last name. I'm sure I'm not saying it's properly, but Hodinott is a retired art director for a Chicago advertising agency. He has been compared to a real-life madman, referring to the popular AMC television show set in the 1960s. "I think they are overstating it," he said of the comparison. Had I not left the business after 45 years with the agency Foote, Cohn, and Belding in Chicago. Since his retirement, he continues creating art. His paintings will be displayed during August at the Ann Lloyd Gallery in the Madden Art Center. An opening reception during Gallery Walk will be from 5 to 7:30 p.m. tomorrow, Friday. Nope, I'm sorry, I keep jumping the gun. Next Friday, August 12th, Hodnott will discuss his artwork at 6 p.m. The artist's wife, Barb, said her husband prefers creating. He draws and paints because he loves it better than writing or talking, she said. Sue Powell invited Hodnott for an exhibit after reviewing his book, Reflections, The Art of Bert Hodnott, Jr. We thought his work was very interesting, she said. Hodnott began creating art at the age of 6. He studied fine arts and advertising at the Art Institute of Chicago. He received numerous industry awards and promotions throughout his career. As an art director for an advertising agency, his job was to create ideas on storyboards for commercials or print ads. Some of the companies he worked with included Dial Soap, Kraft Foods, and First National Bank of Chicago. He believes he got out of the business just in time. Today, artists in his field often sit at a computer instead of an easel. I don't think I would have a job today, he said. Since retiring, Hodnott, 83, spends his days painting what he describes as representational art. I've tried doing abstract art, but I failed miserably, he said. You have to be able to see the subject. Hodnott was able to take what he learned from the business and apply it to his projects. According to the artist, working with an advertising agency gave him tough skin. You felt rejection often, but you just move on, he said. Now, whenever he feels rejection, it is self-inflicted. I just shove it in a drawer or paint over it, Hodnott said. My favorite painting is usually the next one, the one I haven't started yet. I think we have time for this quick note from New York. Winnie the Pooh and friends Piglet, Eeyore, Kanga, and Tigger are celebrating a new lease on their New York City life after enjoying many adventures together. The original toys are looking refreshed after more than a year of much-needed repairs by a textile conservator. They're going back on display Wednesday at the New York Public Library, where they've resided since 1987. An English boy, Christopher Robin Milne, was their original owner. He received them in the 1920s from his father, the author A.A. Milne, who based the Winnie the Pooh story children's stories on the stuffed animals. The library says the year-long conservation included neck alignment, clavicle repair, and bottom fluffing. Pooh will be 95 years old on August 21st. I don't know, that just seemed an important piece of international news to close today's reading of news from the Decatur area for Thursday, August 4th. This has been Ruth McCauley reading with you. As always, I enjoy it so much. I hope you do too. And I'll be back next week. Until then, y'all take care.